Hi, everyone. I'm Ying Chen. I will take over this quantum matter course. I think I will give like in total 5 lectures this week and next week, and then Tim will continue with the discussion. So as Tim probably told you, one focus of this course is that I try to give you a survey about important concepts in quantum matter, particularly the modern quantum matter. So one good way of doing that is through examples, right? So I will continue to do that. In particular, I will again talk about transverse Ising model this week. And it's really a very nice model that we can learn a lot of very interesting physics. So today what I'm gonna tell you is a very interesting concept that called generalized symmetry, and where you can easily understand it in the context of transverse Ising model. And then I will use Jordan-Wigner transformation to be more careful about solving this transverse Ising model using Jordan-Wigner transformation, where you can also see a very important concept that called BCS wave functions or superconductors actually naturally appear there. And the other lecture that I will give this week will about conformal symmetry or conformal field theories at Ising transitions. Again, it will be very brief, but I believe that you can already get a good idea about what is this business of conformal symmetries and CFTs. All right, next week there will be three another lectures. I will tell you what I'm going to teach next week about for those three lectures. Okay, let's again start with transverse Ising model in 1 plus 1D in 1 plus 1D. That's really just a 1D chain, and the Hamiltonian is defined on a chain, and I have a spin 1/2 living on each side, and I can use Pauli matrix to write down the Hamiltonian. I'm probably using a slightly different convention than Tim. I think Tim probably was using ZZ plus X. The physics is the same. So we're going to consider the case that I have ferromagnetic interaction. That means J is larger than zero. And I'm considering a periodic boundary condition that is and similar for Z. OK. And you may remember that I will have two phases in this model as I tune the coupling, let's say this field strength G, and then I can have the ferromagnetic phase where I spontaneously break the Z2 symmetries, that I have two degenerate ground state where have my spins pointing either towards plus x direction or minus x direction. And once I have strong enough transverse field, I will get a paramagnet where I recover the Z2 symmetries. And in between, we get this famous Ising transitions where and this Ising transitions happens precisely when those two couplings is the same, right? And one way to say why you get this transition precisely at the equal coupling point is this so-called Cramer's one-year duality, right? Right, and at g j equals g, where and schematically, you can say that this Cramer's one-year duality kind of map between this product of x and the z operator, right? And sometimes people call this Cramer's one-year duality as a symmetry. It's a special symmetry that emerges at j equals g, and you can try to ask a little bit deeper, saying that what do we really mean by it is a symmetry, right? So let's take a step back, just ask ourselves in quantum mechanics, or quantum field theories. What do we mean by a symmetry, right? Usually, we associate a symmetry with a unitary operator, right? U, such that, and then the symmetry transformation would be implemented as you apply this unitary operators. For example, if I have an operator and then I apply a symmetry transformation to it, that means that I'm multiplying u and u dagger. I'm sandwiched this operator with u and u dagger, right? That is what we mean by symmetry, right? And back to the this transverse Eisen model, right? We know there is a Z2 symmetry. That is the Eisen symmetry, right? And this symmetry is broken in this ferromagnetic phase. And for this Eisen Z2 symmetry, let's say you can implement it as using this unitary operations, that is the product of all the sigma z at each site, right? That is the unitary operators you can use to implement this symmetry, right? And then you can easily show that eta dagger is equals to eta, and then we have transformation for x, and z is invariant. And then more importantly, the Hamiltonian is invariant under this unitary transformation. That's what we mean by this Hamiltonian is Z2 invariant, right? That is the canonical definition of symmetry, right? So then we can ask the question that, right? So that is what we usually mean by a symmetry, right? And then we can ask the question that whether I can find a unitary transformation such that it implements this one-year duality, right? So let's first assume that there exists such, let's assume there exists, there is a unitary operator U such that it implements this one-year duality, meaning that if I apply it to Zi, I end up with we first assume this operator exists, and then to say whether this can ever be true, right? One game you can play is that let's try to apply this hypothetical unitary operators to my eta, that's the Z2 symmetries. And then you can just with a few lines, you can find that actually this cannot be true, right? You just expand this eta. And then since U is a unitary operators, you can actually insert it into each site. Right? Since we assume that this unitary operator implements the one-year duality, we can rewrite this as the product of all the xj plus 1, right? And then in this product, each x appears twice, right? And we know that x squared is 1, and then we end up with saying that this product u eta u dagger is just 1, right? And it doesn't make sense because it also means that eta equals 1, right? Because u is a unitary operator, I can just multiply it twice in the left-hand side, then I end up with this eta equals 1, right? It doesn't make sense because eta is an operator that measures the Z2 symmetry, right? And so that means that indeed there is no unitary operator that could implement this one-year Cramer's one-year duality, right? So then, the solution out is that we should try to extend the idea of symmetry a little bit. That is what we nowadays people mean by generalized symmetry, right? So the idea, the generalization is actually very straightforward. That is, the old definition of the symmetry is that, as I just said, there is a unitary operator, and then I apply it to an operator. I get a new operator. That is my transformation rule, right? That is the old, this is a symmetry definition. Right, and then the new definition of this generalized symmetry is that I just move u from the left hand side to the right hand side. Let's say the goal is that now I just try to find some operators that acts according to this rule, and that is what we mean by generalized symmetry. And in particular, this in this case, this u minus doesn't exist. Right? And that's also why people call it as a non-invertible symmetry. So as you can see, actually the idea of generalized symmetry is very simple and intuitive, in particular when you compare it with the old definition of symmetry. So now let's say how this idea works for this Cramer's one-year duality. So indeed you can directly write this operator done, and I will not really derive it. I have enough space here. Probably not. Use another bot. So you can write down this Cramer's one-year duality transformation. It will be implemented by an operator that I can call it D. It's indeed pretty complicated. I won't really prove that for you that this operator implements the one-year duality, but you can play it by yourself. It's rather straightforward. So it will, yeah, and 1 plus I xj xj plus 1. And I say L times 1 of eta. Yeah. It's very complicated looking operator. And then you can verify that indeed it implements this one-year duality in the sense of generalized symmetry that I just talked about. That if you move this D from left-hand side, left of this operator to the right, then you can find that this relation actually holds. And similar for the for Z, that that's also true. And then for the Hamiltonian, just means that this D commutes with my Hamiltonian, right? So that is really it's just a generalized concept of the symmetry. And as I said, the key is that this operator doesn't have an inverse. That's why it's called non-invertible symmetry. And you can easily say that why it doesn't have an inverse. All those operators here are unitary, but the key is this guy. This guy doesn't have an inverse because it's actually a projection that it projects all the z to odd sector or state to zero, and keep the z to even state invariant, right? So that's why it doesn't have an inverse. I hope it's clear that what is this non-invertible symmetry? Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question. So what does a non-invertible symmetry like do to a state? So normally, if you have a symmetry, a conventional symmetry, if you act on a wave function, then we know that like the inner products after acting the transformation will have the same magnitude, stuff like that. But in this case, what does a non-invertible symmetry do to a state, like a ground state?
You can apply this operator to the state. Yeah, I think it's still, for example, if you apply this operator to the state, it will still get an eigenstate, ground state of the Hamiltonian, right? Simply from this relation, right?
Okay.
And then you can also D operator actually will together with, let's say, eta will form what we called generalized symmetry, or sometimes people call it categorical symmetry. So the reason that people call it categorical symmetry is because this doesn't form a group, right? We know that the group is what we use to is a language that we use to describe symmetries. And for those generalized symmetries, you need to use some concept like category. And again, as I have emphasized several times, that the key is that this operator D doesn't have an inverse, right? For a group, that we know that any the definition of a group is that each element will have an inverse, but it's not true for this D operator. Okay, so this generalized symmetry indeed applies to many different situations, including like lattice models, like this transverse Ising model, and also in many quantum field theories, even like QED type of quantum field theories, it all have this generalized symmetry. And it's a relatively new idea, although this Kramer's one-year duality has been known probably a few decades or even half a century. But this generalized symmetry is something that people started to realize in the recent 10 years-ish. So that's really very new and still a very popular subject that many condensed matter, high-energy people, and also mathematicians are studied. So I hope that this model and this simple example really give you a good idea about what this generalized symmetry is. So, all right, any question?
So, for example, we normally, at least one way of classifying phases is looking at symmetry breaking and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So is there an analogous thing for
that? Yeah, that's a good question. So, for this transverse Ising model, right? If it break the Z2 symmetry spontaneously, you get a twofold degenerate ground state, right? So now you can ask the question that what if this categorical symmetry is spontaneously broken, right? And indeed, you can find that people have shown that in this case, if the categorical symmetry is spontaneously broken, then you will get threefold degenerate ground state. Yeah, you get an actual degenerate ground state. You can kind of say that degenerate ground state comes from this paramagnetic side. Yeah, yeah. And indeed, that was a paper like out probably last month about this. So you see, it's really a very new concept, but to understand it, and you just need this very simple example to understand it. All right. So now I will switch the gear a little bit. So I will switch the gear a little bit. I will use this Jordan-Wigner transformation that team have already introduced to solve the transverse Ising model. Right? I will do it in a more careful manner. And the reason that I want to do it in that way is because there are still a number of interesting physics that we can learn from this, just from this exact solution of the transverse Ising model. So just remind you about this Jordan-Wigner transformation. So the idea is that I introduce a fermionic operators using the by attach a speed a string operator into the spin operators or the other way around. So for example, I can rewrite these spin operators as a product of a string operator and a fermionic operator. Here I'm using complex fermion. I think in Tim's lecture he was introduced to those so-called Majorana fermions, but those Majorana fermions are really just a superposition of those complex fermions. And this string operator is defined in this way. It's a product of all the density operators before this site. So this nj is really just a density operators that is cj dagger cj, right? And similarly, you can write that the y sigma y will be the product of kj times j dagger minus cj, and then the z will be this. Okay, so then you can use it to rewrite the Hamiltonians. The nice thing is that as Tim already told you, that nice thing is that although for x operator there's a string attached to it, but the product of two x have those strings canceled, and then it becomes just a product a bilinears of my fermionic operators, and then that's why eventually we can solve it. So indeed extra care need to be taken for the boundaries, because here, as I said, we are considering periodic boundary conditions. I'm putting this 1D chain in a circle. So then if you consider the boundary terms, that is this x1 times xl, you will find that actually there's always a string attached with this product, which won't be canceled. So the string runs from the first site to the second last site. So this term actually is pretty annoying, right? Because I no longer have the I don't have the nice feature of just a bilinears of my fermions, but you can indeed rewrite it in a slightly nicer form. That is, you can just move these operators to this side, and then also add the add another operator. I just make the string run from first site to the last site, and then it becomes pretty much very similar to other terms, except that I get this extra strings attached with it. Right, so you can rewrite this Hamiltonian in this form, and then you can quickly recognize that actually this term measures the fermion parities of my chain, meaning that it measures whether it's I have even number of fermions or odd number of fermions, and also it's the same as the Ising Z2 symmetry. So in other words, you can call this operator, as minus 1 to n, and then this n is really just the number of fermions that I have. So, and it can, because of this relation, right? And then this n is really just this 1 to minus n is really just the product of all the zj that is also my Eisen z2 symmetry. And then there will be two situations. One is that if I consider a state with z2 even symmetry, I will get a plus 1 here. And if I consider the case of z2 odd state, I will get a minus 1 here, right? And then you can modify your boundary conditions. That is saying that now my boundary conditions is like depends on the fermion parities of my system. So and that means that it's minus say 1 if I consider a z2 even sector. And it's plus C1 if I consider Z2 odd sector. So in other words, if I want to consider any state in the Z2 even sector, I need to play with the fermionic chains with anti-periodic boundary conditions. While if I want to study the Z2 odd sector, I need to play with the periodic boundary conditions for my fermionic chain, right? That and that's the actual complications once we are working with fermions with a periodic boundary condition. Okay, and then as we know that for this transverse Eisen model, I have two different phases, right? One is ferromagnetic phase spontaneous break Z2 symmetry. The other is paramagnetic phase that preserves Z2 symmetry. And then in this ferromagnetic phase, I have twofold degeneracy, right? We know that this twofold degeneracy actually correspond to the degeneracy between the Z2 even state and Z2 odd state. That means in that case, the ground state in two sectors will be degenerate. And once I'm in the paramagnetic phase, then this degeneracy is broken, and then there will be a gap between those two states, and that is what should happen. And then we can work it out to say whether that is true. Okay, so that's rewrite the Hamiltonian in the fermionic language now. So I'm setting this j equals 1, just make it look simpler. So then my Hamiltonian is still just a free fermions that moving on my 1D chain, I get this C dagger term, and also Cj dagger Cj plus 1 and plus the Hermitian conjugate, right? And the boundary condition is taken in this way, and I also get this term come from the transverse field, which acts like an on-site potential. Okay, that is the Hamiltonian. The fermionic Hamiltonian for this transverse Eisen model. And there's one important physics I would like to highlight, is that indeed you can notice that in this Hamiltonian, I have this C dagger term. That means I will not have the particle conservations, right? And this is indeed what people called a BCS Hamiltonian, which was historically was using to discuss superconductors. And just in case you're not familiar with this BCS, let me write their full name down. That's really a milestone in condensed matter research that which helped us to understand the physics of superconductors, right? And although this transverse Ising model itself has nothing to do with the superconductors, but after you're doing this Jordan-Wigner transformation, you actually end up with Fermilic Hamiltonians that describes the physics of superconductors. And of course, you can find Fermilic systems that was described by this type of Hamiltonians, and then that correspond to the what we called P-wave superconductors or Kitaev wire, where you can also there are also a lot of interesting physics like Majorana fermions and so on related to this. Okay, so now let's try to solve this Hamiltonian, and as you probably know, that to solve it, we need to go to the momentum space by doing this Fourier transformation that I'm define operators in the momentum space by just summing over all the operators at each site with an actual phase factor. And also I can do the inverse one that I rewrite Cj as a summation of exponential ik times j times ck. Okay. And again, we need to pay a little bit of attention to the boundary conditions or the Z to even and Z to odd sector here, right? Due to this boundary condition, you can easily convince yourself that if I consider Z to even state, that also correspond to this fermion numbers to be even. In that case, my momentum should take the value as odd numbers times pi over L, with this n to be an integer running from 1 to L over 2. I'm just considering the case that L is an even number, just to make it simpler. But if you want to consider odd L that's similar, you need to modify it a little bit. Okay, similarly, if you consider Z to odd case, I will correspond, it also correspond to n is odd, and then this momentum k is the 2n times pi over L with n running from minus L over 2 plus 1 to 0 and then to L over 2. Okay, that is the this is a consequence of this boundary condition. So now using this Fourier transformation, you can rewrite this BCS Hamiltonian in the momentum space, which will be summation over k, and then inside the sum, it will be g minus cosine k times ck dagger, minus k dagger, it will be ck dagger, ck minus ck CK dagger, Tenkai. Yeah, it's like this. And then minus exponential IK, CK dagger, say minus K dagger, and minus exponential IK, CK, CK, say minus K, CK. Okay, that's is the Hamiltonian you get from the from this Fourier transformation, and again you can see the effect of this symmetry breaking by this particle number breaking from this C dagger term, and this is actually what people called Cooper pair. In the context of the superconductors. And then you can solve this Hamiltonian by group the those fermion creation and annihilation operator in the momentum space. And one thing you can notice that is that actually in this summation, k and minus k, both k and minus k appear, right? You may there may be something like a double counting and so on. So to make it right, it's better to let's say we just choose to work with the positive k case. So then with a bit algebra, you can find that let's say if I consider actually let me use an artboard. Okay, so we can let's rewrite this Hamiltonian in the only in the positive k space, so and you can find that for z to even sector the Hamiltonian will be just a summation of positive k, let me call it hk hat, and then this hk hat is just like this, 2 times g minus cosine k, and say k dagger, say k minus, say minus k, say minus k dagger, and 2 times sine k, I say k dagger, say minus k dagger, and I times say k, say minus k, say k. Okay, that's the Hamiltonian for z to even sector. If you go to the z to odd sector, the situation becomes slightly more complicated because you can see that for z to odd sector, my momentum actually can take value. At both at zero momentum and pi momentum, right? And then for that case, CK and C minus K are the same, right? We need to separate them out, and I end up with a Hamiltonian very similar as this guy. I still get the summation of all the positive K, but I get an extra term at k equal to zero and pi, right? And this hk equals zero and pi equals to 2g minus 2, say zero dagger, say zero, and times 2g plus 2, say pi dagger, say pi, minus 2g, right? That's the Hamiltonian I have. Okay. So and And the other difference between the Z2 even and Z2 odd sectors Hamiltonian is the value of those momentum that we can have, right? As I said, that comes from the boundary conditions, right? For Z2 even, I will have my momentum taking these values. For Z2 odd, I will have my momentum taking that value. Okay, so then for each k hat, we can solve it directly, because it's really just you can rewrite it as a 2x2 matrix, right? We can diagonalize it. We can rewrite this as a 2x2 matrix, which is with say k dagger, say minus k. Yeah. And the matrix element are 2 times g minus cosine k and minus I times 2 sine k and I times 2 sine k and also minus 2. I can rewrite my Hamiltonians like this, and then I'm just need to diagonalize this 2x2 matrix, right? Which is very straightforward to do so. And then we can say that we can, once we diagonalize it, we can rewrite it as some new diagonal fermions that we called gamma, that is and those epsilon k are just my energies. It's 2 times root cosine k minus g square plus sine k square. And this gamma k is a superposition of my creation and annihilation operators. This let me call it uk times ck plus vk star times c minus k dagger, right? It's a superposition of my both creation and annihilation operators. And this uk and vk are just some eigenvectors I get from by diagonalizing this matrix, right? Its concrete form is not important for this discussion. Okay, so now we can now ask that what is the ground state, right, of this Hamiltonian, right, of this Hamiltonian, right? That is also the ground state of my transversalizing model written in this fermionic language. So, and naturally, you can easily say that the ground state of this Hamiltonian will be that it will be a state annihilated by both gamma k and by gamma minus k, right? Otherwise, I will get more energies from the these two operators, right? So let's look at Z2 even sector first. So as I said, the ground state will be will satisfy the condition that gamma k will annihilate it, right, for any k, right? So what should this state look like, right? So you cannot it will not be a vacuum of my fermions, right? Because my gamma k is written as superpositions of both creation and annihilation operator, right? If it is a vacuum of my fermions, then it will not be annihilated by the gamma k, right? So it should be something else. And such state is actually, again, closely related to superconductors. And in literature, it was called Bogoliubov a vacuum you can. So one way to create this operator is that this ground state is that you just apply all the gamma k into a vacuum of my original fermions, right? Let me not write equator here. Let's say you just multiply all the gamma k and gamma minus k into my vacuum state of my original fermions. And for this state, you can easily say that it then will be annihilated by all the gamma k's, right? Because the square of gamma k is zero, right? So, and then you may also want to check that whether this will give you just zero, right? If that's the case, then it's not a valid state, right? With a little bit algebra, you can actually show that this guy is finite, and it can be written as a product of uk plus vk ck dagger ck minus k dagger and times the vacuum. Right. You can, yeah. I won't really do the algebra for you, but you can show this rather straightforwardly. And that is what we call the Bogdyov vacuum. And one thing to again, this the Cooper pair appears here again as in the form of the ground state of a superconductor. And you can try to expand this product, and you will get something like a superposition of various kinds of state. Let's say, obviously, you get some the vacuum of complex fermions, and you also get a state with one Cooper pairs, right? Naturally, you also get state with two Cooper pairs. And so on, right? You basically get n in choices of number of Cooper pairs. They will always exist in my ground state in this Bogdyov vacuum. And that is also, again, this is very important for the physics of superconductors. I don't know if you guys have learned this before. Superconductor. So theoretically, you can understand the superconductors as the condensation or of the Cooper pairs, right? So this product of ck and minus k is a Cooper pair, right? And then the condensation, meaning that you just allow that all the possible numbers of Cooper pairs appear in your ground state, right? And superpose them together with certain prefactor, and then you end up with this ground state of superconductors, right? And it's really interesting that for transverse Ising model, if you write its ground state in terms of those Jordan-Wigner fermions, you end up with this superconductor wave functions. And then you can write the ground state of this state will be just all the summation of all the epsilon k with positive k. And again, this k runs from pi over L, 3 pi of L, and so on, right, till to pi minus pi over L, right? And that is the ground, my ground state energy of the Z to even sector. And one extra thing that we want to check is I want to make sure that this state satisfy the condition that is this n is even, right? Because that's how we get these boundary conditions, right? You can easily say that this is the case for this wave function because the pairs of, say, always, I always get those pairs of creations appear, and then although this ground state doesn't preserve the particle number, its parity, meaning that it's even or odd, is always preserved, right? That is the this ground state is a valid state for the zero even state sector, and similarly you can do the same for the zero odd state. I don't think I have time to do it, so. But the analysis will be very similar, except that you need to deal with this extra mode at the zero momentum and pi momentum. And the key is that now you have to choose one of them field, right? Because I need this ground state to have odd number of fermions, not even number of fermions. And I can only choose one of them to fill, and obviously, I should choose this one to fill to get the lowest state, right? And then you can get the Z2 odd state. And then, let me write it there. And the ground state energy of the Z2 odd state will be, again, the summation of all the epsilon k and minus 2, right? This minus 2 really comes from here. We cannot see. Yeah. So, okay. And, but here, note that my momentum now runs from 2 pi over L to 4 pi over L until pi over pi. Right. So now now you can show that. Let me actually erase here. Now you can show that the even sector always has lower energies regardless of the value of the of G. That means the ground state of the transverse Ising model will be always Z2 even, right? And you can in particular find that you can do it using Mathematica, for example, just write all those energies, choose a final arrow, and then compute the energy difference. And you can find that if G is smaller than 1, right, I'm always considering a case that G is positive. If G is smaller than 1, I'm in the ferromagnetic phase, the ground state, the difference between those two states will always be exponentially small. That means in the thermodynamic limit, I will just get twofold degenerate ground state. While if G equals to 1, the difference between those state, those two states will be proportional to 1 over L, which means that if I'm in the thermodynamic limit, those two states will still have the same energy, but the energy difference approaches to zero in a manner of 1 over L rather than exponential. And this is actually very important for the next lecture when I talk about conformal field theories, conformal symmetry, and so on. And if G is larger than 1, then you can find that the energy difference between those two states are order 1 number, even in the thermodynamic limit that corresponds to the paramagnetic phase, where I have the just unique gapped unique ground state, right? And similarly, you can consider excited state of this transversal Ising model by just now I'm choosing to fill some of those gamma fermions, right? For example, I can multiply a number of gammas to my ground state, right? And then I can get excited state. You just remember that you always need to respect the even or odd number of fermions in my model, and at the critical point again, you can find that the energy gap of all those excited state will again be proportional to 1/L. Again, that is very important for the story of conformal symmetries and conformal field theories. Yeah, I think I should end here.
So in the Z2 odd sector, don't get a ground state that looks like Cooper pairs, is that right?
It's still like Cooper pairs, but you get an extra, yeah, it's like the ground state is like, for example, C, and then it's all, in other words, it's like C dagger times this Bogle-Wolf vacuum. Yeah, yeah. Just fill extra fermions.
And is there any, can we map the phase diagram of the Ising model onto the phase diagram that we get here?
Yes, I think Tim probably already mentioned that in the language of fermions, right, those two phases correspond to, one is a so-called topological phase of Kitai wire, where on the edge you get those dangling Majorana fermions, right? And for that, if you consider open boundary condition, right, and those dangling Majorana fermions give you twofold degeneracy, right, and the other phase is like the trivial phase in Kitai wire, where you have those Majorana fermions just pair.
Okay.
Yeah. And one picture missing. One picture is not. One thing is not so obvious in this Majorana fermion language is that if you consider a theoretical boundary condition, right, where you don't have dangling, you don't have edge, then you don't have dangling spins, and then it seems that this twofold degeneracy is gone, right? But we know that for transverse Ising model, we do have twofold degeneracy. And to recover this twofold degeneracy, you really need to do those analysis carefully. In the end, this twofold degeneracy really just corresponds to degeneracy between my Z2, my even number of state and odd number of state of this fermionic system.
Okay.